Hey folks, Paul Reddick here. Welcome to the call. I just want to say I'm battling a little bit of a cold here, so sorry if I sound a little different than I normally do, but we'll do our best to make it through, and I certainly didn't want to miss the conference call. So what we're going to go over today is what is currently emerging as three trends of the recruiting business. And these are the trends of players who are getting noticed the most, who are the ones that are attracting the right schools, the right scouts, the right recruiters to them, and are overall getting the most from their recruiting process and getting to the school that is best for them. And this is what I've seen. I've actually seen this over time develop. It's not something that just kind of started happening instantly. It really is a trend that has shifted over time, and mainly because, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, the industry was a lot simpler than it was. So, like, when I first got into scouting, the industry was very, very simple. There was a few showcases here and there. One or two national showcases started to pop up, and that was kind of it. Well, the industry exploded, you know, over the decade after that. And since then, there has been a little bit of a shift because the industry got overloaded with you know, camps and showcases and events that came in just to make a buck and really not to be of service to the athlete or to the family. They were just there kind of to turn a profit. It was kind of that simple. So what I want to do is go through the three things that I've seen firsthand that the players who are getting noticed are using and consistently using to make scouts attracted to them. So the number one thing by far that has changed in the industry is the way players are using video. Let me explain. Video became, you know, kind of popular to use about 15 years ago, you know, with actually VHS tapes, if you can imagine that today. And then as DVDs came in and stuff like that, it became more accessible. Now with the internet and internet video in the last like 5 years or so, it's really exploded. But that has also brought in a bunch of people who have entered the marketplace selling you video services. And a lot of them, you know, will claim to get your video to 1,500 schools or whatever their promises are, you know, today. I don't even know what they are. And some of them charge a pretty penny. But the players that are getting the most attention are not using those services. The players that are getting the most attention are the players that are doing video on their own much differently. See, because one of the drawbacks that hurt so many players was the way that the videos were produced. You know, there was a period there where there were slick videos. You know, I actually seen one that opened up with a kid sitting in front of his fireplace petting his German Shepherd and talking about his life. You know, then there was the ones that were edited game highlight clips, you know, where you see a kid hitting home run after home run, striking out, you know, batter after batter, that were obviously just all edited together to kind of manipulate whoever was watching it. Well, coaches didn't fall for that stuff very often. The other downside of video is that most times when video got sent out to the coaches, it got sent out either emailed or whatever in bulk so that coaches would have to sift and sort through players and spend a lot of time to do that. The average college coach today does not have a lot of time to sift and sort through videos of the players that are maybes, because another downside is that the companies that were producing these videos would take just anyone. They weren't doing any kind of vetting process of the player. So the college coach would watch a couple of videos, they would see a couple of players, the players weren't very good, they lost faith in the video service, and that stuff either was deleted from their inbox or just tossed in the trash, like many times that the videos that I received that, you know, I would not even open because I knew the quality of the people that were doing it. So how are players using video today? It's very simple. And the key word is unedited. The best players are sending unedited clips to coaches. So instead of sending a half-hour highlight clip or an eight-minute clip of you fielding some ground balls or you hitting off of a pitcher that they can't even see the pitcher, or you throwing a couple pitches to, you know, looking at your mechanics and not even being able to see the catcher sometimes, those are not very helpful. So what players are doing now is they're sending two types of videos, practice and game videos. But the key is that they're all unedited. So let's say I'm a pitcher, and I'm going to showcase my five pitches, So, excuse me, I'm going to showcase my pitches in 5 videos. So I may say this is 10 unedited fastballs over the plate. That would be clip 1, and that would be a few minutes long. Clip 2 would be 5 fastballs inside, 5 fastballs low, you know, outside. Then the next would be, you know, 5 up and in, 5 low and away, or whatever mixture, doesn't matter. The third clip would be 10 unedited curveballs. Fifth clip, 10 unedited changeups. Now you might do more, might do a few more, might do a few less, doesn't matter. You can even put multiple clips in from the stretch, from the windup. But the key is that they're unedited. So you leave in your mistakes. Now, obviously, if you throw 10 balls outside the strike zone, you're not having a good day. I wouldn't put that one in there. But I would try and get a very typical performance from you. So in a practice session in a bullpen, if you're throwing 10 fastballs down the middle, 8 or 9 of them should be around the plate, around your target. And if you throw one in the dirt, you throw 2 in the dirt, big deal, or you miss your target, big deal. See, a coach knows that. They know you're going to make mistakes. There's an added benefit that they'll also see how you kind of compose yourself. Because one of the things that players used to do, like I said, was throw together these edited clips. So if you want to take me to the basketball court and send a video to Duke University of me shooting 3-pointers, hey, if we stay there all night, I'm sure I could hit 10 that you could edit together into a nice video. But it's not going to show what I can do on the court, and no coach in the world is going to believe that that's what you can do. But if I show you all my pitches in unedited clips, well, then you can watch what I do, how I do it, how I work a little bit. Then the other benefit of it is that if I get a video and say that video is 20 minutes long, am I really going to sit through 20 minutes as a coach? No. But it's kind of like if I can watch a 1.5-minute clip and I can watch that 1.5-minute clip, and if there's something I like, then I can watch the next clip and so on and so forth, and kind of the coach gets more involved in watching it, then there's an easier commitment for the coach to watch your video. So what do you think a coach is going to watch? 20-minute video? Or is he going to take a 1-minute video and check out what he can see? He's going to do the 1-minute. Most times on the 20-minute, he's only watching 1 minute anyway. So you put the video, unedited, 10 unedited fastballs, whatever it is, 1:59. A coach is more apt to watch that than not. When it comes to game footage, you do 1 batter. You know, this, however long it is, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever, however long it is. Then you do another batter. Even if it's a batter, let's say you battled with a batter. You know, let's say you had a good, you know, you made some foul tips or whatever, and then eventually maybe even got a hit off you. Well, okay, sometimes that's the way it goes. You know? But I would make sure that you're not hiding your flaws. And that's what a lot of people try and do with videos, is they try and make the videos a fictional account of their playing days. And nobody believes that you are without failure playing the game of baseball. So if you're putting your video together and you're not showing that, hey, sometimes you make a great pitch and a guy sticks the bat out and it bloops over the first baseman's head, that's fine. But I want to see you making the great pitch. Now I want to see how you come back and react to it. You know, did you come right back? You know, maybe you showcase if you're pitching to a batter, one that you went 3-1 on and you fell behind and you came back and got the hitter out. Same thing. You know, there's all kinds of things. So include unedited clips so the coach can go along gradually and watch what he wants to see. So if you're a hitter, you do 10 unedited balls in the cage. Another clip, 10 unedited balls. Two, you know, here's 10 different at-bats, game at-bats, versus left-hander, versus right-hander, versus a hard thrower, versus a junk ball, at night, during the day. Give the coach a variety and let them see what you can do. That's how the best players are doing it now. They are no longer sending half-hour edited highlight reels. Nobody wants to see highlight reels. It's the way it goes, okay? And you also have to think about it. You know, there's a lot of, it's almost like if you were dating, you know, you wouldn't sit down and go up to somebody and say, you know, hey, can I sit down right now and spend 2 hours with you and get to know you? No, if you saw somebody you like, maybe you go up and introduce yourself, talk to them, maybe ask for a phone number or an email, exchange some emails, talk a little bit, and then maybe get together on a date, all right? Well, this is how it goes with the coach, too. See, when you pop that 20, 30-minute video in front of him, you're asking him to invest that time to see everything you're about. Or you could just say, hey, coach, here's a 1-minute video, and you can watch the first one, it's just 1 minute. And it's a lot easier. It's more of a progression than just dumping it on there and saying, hey, here's everything I am, and you sit down now for a half hour and watch it. You're just not going to get a half hour of a coach's time if you are, unless you are a prospect that already is on their radar and they're making a decision on. So that's the number one trend, is the way that players are using video. And also, too, the other thing I've noticed is that the players that are getting the best use of video are not relying on one form of media to deliver it. So in other words, they're not just going internet, and they're not just going DVD. They're doing both. So we have to understand that people that are under 35 or maybe under 40 don't have the tech savvy that we have as young people, all right? Especially, you know, teenagers that are looking to be recruited. You have an understanding of the tech world that somebody who's 40, 45 might never have. And there are coaches out there, I know them, that still are looking for VHSs to be sent to them. So at the very least, you want to make sure that you include a physical DVD, something that they can hold in their hand. Because also, too, people tend to, you know, save links, save emails, delete emails, forget about emails. It's real easy to lose that. So you want to make sure that you deliver it in multiple media formats. So that's number one. The second thing is the way they're approaching showcases, tournaments, or recruiting events. You see, it used to be you showed up, you paid your fee, and you hoped that somebody noticed you. Well, that is just not the way it works anymore. It's not even close to the way it works anymore. Well, that's the way it works for most of the people, but not the people that are attracting attention. People that are attracting attention, what they're doing is what we call the BD&A formula, before, during, and after. See, before they get to the showcase, they're making sure that the schools that they want are going to be there. They're not just going to blind showcases because they got a letter in the mail and it sounds good. And we'll get into that. We'll talk more about that in the third trend. So what they're doing is, before their event, they're making sure they contact a coach. So the coach who's going to the event, who knows that they're interested in their school, knows they're going to be there, and usually we'll set up some time to reach out and talk to the coach. Even if it's just to shake their hand and say, hello, I'm John Smith. I'm the guy who wrote you the letter. I'm from, you know, Plymouth, Massachusetts. And that's a big part of it. They are not showing up to showcases blindly. They're letting the coaches know that they are going to be there via letter, email, phone call, whatever. Now, there's some rules and restrictions that apply, okay, depending upon how old you are, your grade, of how much contact they can have with you. So if you go up to a coach, you introduce yourself, and they aren't very, you know, cordial or friendly back, it's probably because you might not be in the rule area, that they really physically cannot talk to you. It's against the rules for them to contact you. So you may send a letter to a coach if you're a junior in high school saying, I'm going to be at this camp. You might not get a response from them because they're just bound by the rules that they can't. Go to ncaa.org to always be updated on the rules because they change from time to time. So I hate to quote rules because I don't know when you'll be listening to this and the rules could change tomorrow. So that's one way. During the event, like we talked about, during the event, they are making the coach aware that they're there. Don't just assume the coach is going to remember that you sent them a letter and you'll be there. He's likely to. He's a lot more likely to remember if you don't send him a letter at all. But if he knows you're there and you're there and he's there, go up to him. Introduce yourself. Coach, I'm Johnny Smith. I'm the guy who sent you the letter. Just want to say glad to meet you and, you know, happy to be here. A lot of that stuff happens before event. So always get to an event early. If your event starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, get there at 7:30. And as the coaches come in, if you can go up there and shake their hand, introduce yourself, I'm going to tell you, that will go a long way. As a scout, that would have went a long way with me. Somebody come up to me and said, hey, this is who I am, and, you know, just wanted to let you know I'm here, and just to say hi, and there you go. I'd probably just look at, you know, just give them a look. Because I say, hey, the kid sent me a letter. The kid has the maturity to come up and introduce himself. He seems like a nice young man. He's presenting himself well. And, you know, I'm going to give him a look. I'll give him a look. Now, it might not turn into anything. It's going to be your talent, ultimately, that dictates everything. but you never want it to be something else. And that's the other part of the during process. During events, the players who are getting noticed the most only let their talent be the determination, the determining factor, excuse me. So they're dressed well. They show up on time. They hustle. They play hard. They do what it takes. They do all the things. They respect the game. They play the game right. They play the game hard. They take drills seriously. They hustle from station to station. They do everything that we all just know you should to respect the game and be a good baseball player. See, because I never want anyone to be in a position where something you do behaviorally affects what your talent might dictate. And I've told this story a couple times in videos where I was sitting next to a Division I coach, big-name coach in this eastern part of America, and we were both there looking at the same kid. He was looking at him as a potential college player, and I was looking at him as a potential pro player. Well, the kid made a ground out and came back, fired off his helmet into the fence. Coach tried to talk to him. He fired off some curse words, you know, in anger. And the coach folded up his little folder and walked away and said, "That's all I need to say. I'm done with that kid." And that was it. So it was nothing about his talent. His talent was really unquestionable. But what it really was this kid's behavior just could not be trusted. So those are the things you're doing during the session. So what about, excuse me, what about after? And this is where a lot of people drop the ball, in that they're very good at, you know, if you do the letters, you let the coach know you're there, you get to the event, you introduce your coach, you respect the game, play the game the right way. Then afterwards, you just kind of, if you drop the ball, well, you've kind of gone two-thirds of the way. The final part is to now follow up. So you know the coach probably saw you play. Now you want to know what he thinks. This is the hardest part, the after part, but this is what the players for getting noticed do because they want an answer very quickly. See, most people don't want to hear some kind of, that there's a chance that could be rejected. Get over that now. Just get over it because you're going to be rejected by most of the schools that you attempt to. You're only looking for one to accept you. So you want to find out. So follow up with the coach, email, phone call, letter. Ask the coach, "Coach, it was great meeting you at that event. I hope you got a chance maybe to see me play. I hope you did. If you did, I'd really be curious about your feedback. You know, do you think that maybe I would be a fit for your school? If so, you know, I'd love to maybe talk to you about it because I'm very interested in your school." That's it. Real simple. See, we tend to make these communications like our life story instead of getting right to the point. You know, so follow up, get a yes or a no. And it's not going to be that black and white, like, yes, we want you, no, we don't. It could be that you're just going to take the next step in the communication. And that next step might be, I don't know, you go for a visit or you fill out some forms or, you know, I don't know. There's 100 other next steps that could be. But whatever it is, you either want to get, no, I don't think you'd be a great fit for us, best of luck. Or, yeah, we did like what we see. We'd like to see more or whatever their next step is. Now, here's the one thing people forget about rejection. Remember, if a coach says, no, I don't think you'd be a great fit for our school right now, well, this coach now has obviously treated you with some respect. He answered your letter or email. He knows that you did your homework, you're a prepared player, you showed up, you did the right things, you introduced yourself, you followed up, you played the game right. So now is an opportunity to use that coach to maybe get some feedback on some other places that you could go to because now you kind of have that relationship. So if the coach comes back and says no, well, you say, "Hey, coach, I appreciate it. It really means a lot to me that you take the time to see me play, and certainly, thank you for your feedback, and best of luck in the season next year. And, you know, by the way, are there any schools that you think I would be a good fit for? Since, you know, obviously I'm not a good fit for your school, but do you know anyone else?" And, you know, you'd be amazed because everyone in the baseball world kind of knows everyone. If they don't know them, they know of them, or they know them indirectly, or they know them through a friend, or you never know how. It's really funny how the baseball world works in chains and circles. So what you want to do is use that, and you'd be amazed at how many people will give you a follow-up and say, "Oh, this might be a good school for you," or "I know this guy, and you know, give him a call." And then you know what happens from there? If it does work out, the coach says, hey, you email the coach of coach school B, recommended by the coach who said no to you, and you say, hey, coach so-and-so from this school, you know, I was interested in his school. He didn't think I was a good fit, but he thought I might be a good fit for your school. Well, guess what happens? That letter now gets a completely different set of attention than anything else. Because it's coming from his friend who recommended you to him, right? So you can take a rejection and really make it into a positive. And it's this overall system that people are using that makes the most difference and gets them the most exposure. And that leads right into the third one, which is everyone who's getting noticed and getting recruited these days has a plan. And the first part of that plan is you must be clear. See, when I talk to kids who've gotten scholarships and I ask what they did, the common answer is we went in with a plan and we knew what we were doing. And that plan starts with your list of schools. See, most people will just say, I'd like to play Division I baseball, or I want to play for Florida State, or I want to play for Miami. Or, and that all sounds great, but what you have to do is figure out what you want from a school, excuse me, athletically, academically, and socially. And it starts with making a list of about 10 schools that you think that you could play baseball at, that are good fits for you academically, and have the social scene that you want, whatever it is that you want. It could be a small school, big school, city, country, you know, whatever it is you want socially from the school. And then you start your plan. See, because if you have that plan set up, and that plan might be to make videos, get the videos to the coaches, find out what events those coaches go to those events, do your before, during, and after with the coach, follow up, and then lead from there. If you have the plan set and you're going to work the plan, that's the best way to make sure that you're going to get all the looks that you deserve. And it's not a hard process. The problem is why most people don't go through the process, quite honestly, is fear. They're afraid of the rejection. They're afraid if they go for a school that they might get rejected or they might miss out. So what happens is fear usually paralyzes. And when people are in fear, they usually do nothing. I promise you that, just like we said, if you do get rejected, you can turn that into a positive very, very quickly. So the three things that players are doing now, number one, they got a plan. They know the schools they're targeting. They know they're going to get videos to them. They're going to find out what events they go to. Then they use the video formula we talked about, the unedited video formula. And then they follow up with the coaches. When they do go to an event, it's an event that will be attended by the coaches that they're interested in, not just any event. Don't waste your money on events that are not geared towards the school that you want to go to. So you could go to the national showcase and have 100 schools there, and maybe none of them are schools you want to go to. You could perform great. None of them are interested in you. You're not interested in them. Big whoop. Doesn't mean anything. Or you could go to one with 25 kids in it that has three schools you're interested in, perform great, and it could be a small, no-name event, but it's one that gets you where you want to go and gets you the attention you need. So it's the video formula, the before, during, and after, and going into everything with a plan. That's what the best players who are attracting attention are doing today. So I hope this helps. This is a really short call, and I appreciate you tuning in and listening. If you got any questions, go ahead and email them to me at Paul Reddick, PaulReddick, @AOL.com. And also make sure you check out the full program where we teach you how to do this whole entire plan in depth at PlayBaseballInCollege.com. So talk to everyone later. Have a good day, and see ya.